Erev Shabbat Shalom. It's been a very long time. I apologize for not having prepared a video for Parshat Bereshit. We'll have to get to it next time around. Parshat Noach presents so many issues and so many questions and so many aspects that it's hard to know where to start. One aspect of it about which I'm not going to talk about, which I do want to recommend somebody who does and addresses some of the more troubling literary issues in the Parsha. Of course, there's all the questions about the dates and the numbers of days and stuff like that goes on in the Parsha that they don't always seem to line up. And for that, I strongly recommend the book Ani Ma'amin by my friend and colleague, Rabbi Professor Joshua Berman, which addresses head-on, among other things, this kind of perplexing issue in the Parsha. In general, it's a wonderful work. Being transparent, I was consulted about the book, and he thanks me graciously in the beginning. But if those kind of issues bother you about the Parsha, I couldn't recommend a better book than Ani Ma'amin by Joshua Berman. But that's not what I want to talk about. One of the themes that goes through the Parsha is that of response to cataclysm and response to disaster. And I would like to here basically put together three separate episodes that frame the Parsha, the generation of the flood on the one hand, the generation of the Tower of Babel on the other, and then the story of the unfortunate episode that involved Noah and his son Ham, apparently his youngest son, although there is some discussion about that, sort of try to see what contemporary value or contemporary implications for post-World War II or post-20th century, early 21st century peoples as we are, what we can learn from it. Okay, so after the flood, after Ark lands, then Noah, opens the door and everybody goes out and all the animals spread through the earth, and Noah comes out with his family and they offer sacrifice to God, thanking him for saving them. And right afterwards, the Torah tells us that Noah planted a vineyard and got absolutely, totally drunk. Not drunk, just, happy, but like on the floor, collapsed drunk. While he was in this state of extreme inebriation, his youngest son, Ham, did something to him, not clear what. And then the Torah says that Noah, when he found out what he had done to him, he got furious, and he was his nakedness has been exposed, and then he cursed out Ham and cursed out all of his descendants. He really laid it on thick. In the interim, in order to uncover their father, the other two sons, Shem and Yefet, took some kind of a cloak, walked in backwards to cover Noah so they shouldn't see him and embarrass him or humiliate him. And that led, at the same time, Noah to bless Shem and Yefet. Now, it's a very kind of strange episode. And when Rashi comes to decide or to discuss what exactly Ham had done, he gives very unhappy, very unfortunate, and very disturbing possibilities. One possibility was that he actually castrated his father. The other one was that he abused him, that he raped him. That's pretty heavy. And the question is, why such an extreme approach? I would like to suggest, and I'm not so sure that this is drush. I think this actually has a very profound, sociological and cultural truth here. That what you have in this episode are three different approaches, actually four different approaches to life after a cataclysm. then you have, first let's start with Noah, because the flood was a cataclysm. Yes, people say it purified the earth. It, very, very nice. All the animals died, all the people died. That's a cataclysm. It's a cataclysm. So Noah, his response apparently was to escape. He couldn't take it. So he got drunk. He didn't want to know. The pain was too great. I can only imagine that he had terrible, terrible survivor's guilt. No question. I mean, you know, you think about it. I have no question that he had survivor's guilt. So he decided the only way to be able to get through the hundreds of years that were left for him, according to the Torah, it was just to get drunk. He didn't want to hear anything. He wanted to self-medicate and anesthetize. He didn't want to remember. Maybe he wanted to dream of the world that preceded the flood, when all of his friends and family and everybody he knew and the world that he knew were still existed. So that's one possibility. I think that the two possibilities of whatever it was that Ham did to his father also betoken fairly common responses to cataclysm. He castrated him. That was one possibility. What does that mean? What was that about? So I think there were two possibilities. One is that Ham was acting out, that he's mad at his father, that his father had sired a generation and brought people into such a horrible world, or maybe he was mad at his own birth, or that he thought at that point that there shouldn't be more children. He could control himself, maybe. But his father might have more children and help to repopulate the world. No, you don't want to bring children into a world where this kind of cataclysm can happen. ZPG. Wants to be, what's the word they use in Europe now? Child-free. That's one possibility. What about the possibility that he actually raped his father? So here, I think you have another possibility. What's the response to cataclysm? Total and absolute dissolution of morality and respect. Isha Yashar Be'nav Yaseh, do whatever you want. There's no room that let din let die in. There's no judge and there's no law and there's no rules. In the wake of the cataclysm, all bets are off. I'll do whatever I want to do. And if it includes having sex with my father, I'll do that too. Total moral collapse with an aggressive end to it. So those are three options. It's interesting in that regard that you can actually see the Tower of Babel as a response to the flood. And here I would like to refer to a long discussion that Rav Soloveitchik had that I actually heard the original discussion. It appears in shorter form, much shorter form, in the book, which is called Soloveitchik's lectures on Genesis, called Abraham's Journey, but the original was much, much longer, much more elaborate, that the Tower of Babel actually, the so-called Migdal Babel, was actually a response to the flood. What was the Tower of Babel? What was it? What you have there is an example of the creation of a totalitarian society. There is no room for individualism. Everybody, all of mankind, or all of Babylonia, was enlisted for the building of this tower. And there was no room for any kind of individualism. Anybody who, in fact, humanity, or everybody had to be the same, do the same, and accept the yoke or the ideals of the society as a whole, and you weren't allowed to deviate therefrom. To the extent that the power of the tower, or if you want, the power of the state or the power of the ideology, was far more important than the value of any individual. Rav Soloveitchik used to, like, in that connection, quoted a comment in the Midrash, where the Midrash says that if a person fell down, then nobody paid attention. But if a brick fell down, which would, you know, what's the word, inhibit or delay the completion of the tower, they were all hysterical. Well, who's going to come bring us another brick? Because the bricks and the building are far more important than the people, because ultimately the salvation of the people will be only in the subsuming of every individual into this project of the tower. Reminds me of Soviet building projects, and also of stories that I'd heard about the building of the Great Wall of China, where, you know, as they were building, if somebody died, they just, you know, included them in the building. Why is that a response to the flood? Because, says Rav Soloveitchik, the flood, what did the flood come? What did the flood come to? What did the flood come to repair? Why had God had it? Why did he say he regretted ever making man? Because of the characteristics of the generation that preceded it. And what were its problems? So if you look at the beginning of the Parsha tells us that all of mankind had destroyed or demolished or corrupted its flesh on the land. Says Rashi, the way Chazal understood it, that there was total and absolute license. There was no respect for the individual. It was sort of chaos. It was moral chaos. That there was total sexual dissolution of roles. That the people had, there was bestiality, and everybody was with everybody else, and nobody, didn't matter, as long as you just did whatever felt good. You have your right to. There is no law. There's nothing. There's no moral law. There's nothing which contains you. There's nothing which controls you. You do it for whatever you want, and there are no boundaries. Similarly, on the other side, that the land had been full of Hamas. What's Hamas? Hamas means in this connection, at least the way Rashi has it. Stealing. People didn't respect each other's property. They didn't respect each other's persons. And they didn't respect each other's property. So they just took stuff. And in other words, everything was off. Whatever I want, it was total chaos and total dissolution of morality. That was, and that was the sin of the generation of the flood. So comes the Tower of Babel and says, no, so we're going to impose discipline from on top. But that ended up being just as bad, certainly just as bad as the generation of the flood, because just if they were overly autonomous and overly individualist and overly this and overly that, here they just totally they looking for a steamrolled over individual validity. So both responses or both situations are bad, both extremes. Both extreme self-indulgence and autonomy and creation of individual truth, and also imposition of a wiping across the board of individuality and individual worth. Wow, so what's the solution? So the solution that the Torah hints at, I think, is found in the actions of Yefet and Shem. Shem and Yefet walk in. They have respect for their father, for his individuality, for his pain, for his personal pain of being a survivor, for his personal pain of having been, something happened to him. It was horrible. It was horrific. And wish to get, and at the same time, they did not want to exploit him, and they wanted to be respectful. It's sort of element of, we are, you know, sort of not inferior, but we are on a lower level. We serve you, serve the older generations. And they work together. So the Rabbi Naftali Svi Yehuda Berlin, the Rosh Yeshiva of Lozhin, in his wonderful commentary on the Torah, Hamik Davar, notes that Shem was the ancestor of all the Semites, was the ancestor of Abraham. Shem, according to rabbinic tradition, was the one who was the most aware of God and of our dependence on God, and the fact that it was God who sets morality. Yefet is the ancestor, according to the Torah, of Greece. Use of the mind, use of the reason, use of your logic. They work together. They worked together to be able to cover up the only survivor, the surviving descendant of Adam, the one who brought them into the world. Says the Nitziv, says Rabbi Berlin, says really what happened over here is as follows. By working together, Yefet defers to Shem, saying, man has to use his reason to recreate the world, to recreate morality. In the context of belief in God, realizing our own limitations, because what was the sin of the Mabul, or the flood, or the generation of the tower at the same time, that they both, everyone turned themselves into a god that wasn't God. So they worshiped false gods, they worshiped false worship. In the generation of the flood, they worshiped themselves. In the generation of the tower, they worshiped the state. But neither of them worshiped God. They made themselves their own idols. The blessing of Noah was Yafta Lokim Liyefet Vyefkon Liyosha. May God endorse the beautiful things, the wonderful things that Yefet can achieve through his brain, through his creativity. He ends up living in the tents of shame, in an ambiance of realizing of the limitations and also of the possibilities of our humanity under God, so that we won't end up worshiping ourselves. And that combination, which the Torah ultimately will develop as the real response to the flood. Okay, next week we get to talk about my favorite parsha, the whole Torah, which is Lech Lecha. It's not just for people who made Aliyah, and we will talk about that. In the meantime, Shabbat Shalom. Please feel free to share this video, or to share the voice file. I'm putting this up on my Facebook page. It'll be on Instagram, on YouTube. I welcome your comments, and I look forward to sharing words of Torah in the next week. Okay, Shabbat Shalom.